Okay.
Barely, I think. One, two, three, four. Four out of seven, yes, you do.
Five, Michael, right? Oh, no, four, you're right. Sorry, two alternates.
Right.
We're good.
Okay, we're ready.
Meeting to order. Michael, would you do the honors and just give a pledge to him?
Please join me.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you, Michael.
Maybe the first item we've done, the call to order and the roll call, pledge of allegiance. Approval of the minutes, everyone makes sense to read the minutes from the, we have two approvals, the January 17th and then the February 18th special meeting. Approval of the minutes for April 17th and June 12th. Sorry about that. That's the tour that we do.
Move to approve.
Moved by Darius. We have a second.
I second.
On the second. Approve, all approve?
Aye.
Aye.
Any public comments? We have no public members present. Staff reports, Series C update. Very good.
Wonderful. So what I'm going to show you today, if you weren't at the board meeting where Galinka presented the Series C bond sale, I'm going to repeat that tonight. To give you, just to highlight some of the major points of the Series C bond, our third series.
That's what
you're
going to do. His
presentation. I want to make sure I'm doing this right. This is not PowerPoint, so I'm having to roll through it. In the Prop K, as you remember, this was a highlight to the board to bring back, just to summarize the actual Prop K allocation of $287 million authorization by the voters. We have sold three series. We sold Series A here. And you have this copy in your book as well. On June 22nd, 2011 for $142 million. Series B was sold on May 8th, 2012 for $65 million. And we just sold Series C for $74.7 million. That gives us about $5 million left. And I can't remember if it presents it in this presentation, but that would be about 5 to 6 years from now before they could sell that, because the bonds under the new laws have to be within a 25-year span. And so if they're caps, they can go a little longer if they're not caps. And so given our assessed valuation projection, that would be about the time we could sell the last $5 million worth of bonds when the assessed value, it fits within assessed valuation. And then that would go another 25 to 30 years, depending on the combination of bonds they sell. So, Prop K, we sold the next phase to start funding these other schools' projects. La Costa Meadows, and I have a presentation on this with a little more detail. La Costa Meadows, San Marcos Middle School, Alvin Dunn, Richland, and some various other projects at other sites. If you remember, one of our main goals is to try to start reducing the portable buildings that we have. They're aging. They tend to have about a 20-year to 25-year useful life. We're pushing that past 25 years now. And so we're starting to Band-Aid them. To give you an example, if I had to replace the floor, we're starting to do that at the high school, about $20,000 to $25,000 just to replace the whole floor and redo it. And that's where we start having problems, because there's a lot of it depends on what they put them on, whether it was dirt or asphalt and so forth. You get a lot of moisture problems over the years. So that's a real goal of the district, is to start replacing that. I believe we have close to 280, 300 portable buildings in the district left. Here's a composite of what makes up the various bond sales. So we have CIBs, current interest bonds. And a current interest bond, you sell a bond, let's say for $5,000, and it may be a six-year bond. So you pay interest all the way along, and then you make a balloon payment in the sixth year. That's a current interest bond. You're paying the interest as you go along, and then you make the balloon payment at the end. It's not like our house loans, I think I explained this before, where you're paying, chipping away at the premium. We don't do that with bonds. Now, cabs, on the other hand, it's a balloon payment at the end, but we don't pay the interest. We also pay a balloon payment on the interest at the end as well. So that's what we have, those two types of bonds. And you can see we have $168,350,000 in CIBs, $113.4 million in cabs. Total, $281,744,000 sold to date. Here's what the total debt will be, $881 million, or a 3.3-to-1 ratio, 3.13-to-1 ratio for the total. Here's your years, 26 years average, 40 years on the Series B, and 26 years average on the Series C.
Gary, if I
may. Yes.
This graph is actually very good in explaining why you needed to issue cabs. Mm-hmm. If you look at that dashed line, that's your available revenue to support the debt service based on the projected assessed values. And you see the series, the combination of A, B, and C goes up to that dashed line as much as it can. So the Series C, you see up until 2039, it goes right up to that line. You couldn't go over that line because you aren't projecting you're going to have revenue. But in order to generate the funds, you still want to sell additional bonds to generate more revenue today. Mm-hmm. So that you do that using the caps.
Yes. And then the caps, like the new law says, 25 years. So to hit this gap, you have to wait probably another 5 years to hit that 2042 gap and start filling that in.
So this shows that this Series C used up as much of this current interest bonds as you could possibly do.
Yes, in our annual projected revenues. Yes.
But that hole in around 2042 is still largely avoidable. And I
went
through the numbers,
was.
And something like $84 million is what I figured we lost in that. And with Prop 13 in a suburban area, that means a hell of a lot of taxes are going to be transferred from the single family dwelling property owner and the big apartments. So I agree that you needed cabs to get as much money as you did. I just disagree that it was necessarily the most appropriate way the bonds were set up in different tranches.
Well, I think Dolinka, I mean, this is sort of beyond the scope of what we're supposed to do here, but that whole, I think Dolinka explained that in the past, and it was based on what they thought was going to be happening in terms of the market, and that didn't happen. So they got stuck with that hole. And now with AB 182, 189, they're sort of stuck. You know, they can't fill that gap today.
Yeah.
They can't do it.
Yeah. And that related to Series B, and Series B, they thought, hit the lowest interest rate. So they wanted that to be the ones furthest out, and they were going to fill this with Series C in cabs when we wanted to stay within $44 per 100,000. That was the decision made back in 2011 and 2012. So when the board said, no, we can go to $60, that would have changed the decision model if we would have had that way back when we started this. So you go with the information you have. Yes, Tom?
The thing that I think is important to note, though, cabs are also very risky. If you look at the overall principal that was borrowed on Series B is $65 million.
Yes.
And we're paying back with the total debt service of over $400 million.
Mm-hmm.
So there is some cost that you incur using cabs, and there's the philosophical dilemma, is that appropriate or not? And in my view, it's kind of risky.
Well, it looks like the $60 limit should have been brought up during the Series B discussion.
Yeah.
Should have.
You know, at that point, I think the community was saying, look, you told us it's going to be 44. You know, we want to plan for 44.
The community never had a chance to vote on the 60. So,
well,
They did it after.
I'm sorry.
Proposition K is 60.
Yes. Now.
No, it was. Proposition K, when it was approved, was $60 limit.
Yeah, $60 limit, but the taxpayer was told 43 or whatever, and
it was anticipated to be 44. But yeah,
we are getting.
Okay. So, any other issues on this? Okay. And this is again in your plan. Here's the Series C. So here's what makes up Series C. We sold a principal of $74.7 million. We received a premium of $4.4 million because some of the bonds at the back end, as it was explained to us, those buyers want an interest rate of higher than what they're actually paying, so they pay for it. The average is still, I'm going to grab a figure, 3.5, but they were wanting 5 on paper. So let's say 10 years, 15 years from now, they want to sell it on the open market. It's easier to sell the 5% than it is the 3.5. But they paid for it, and that money, this $4 million, goes right to the treasurer down here. This is how we use it. We got $74,336,000 in our construction fund. Almost $4 million goes to the treasurer to make payments, to actually make bond payments. And then here's your issuance cost down here, which I have another fee. That's $784,000.
Wasn't the expected premium about $2 million, a little over $2 million initially?
I don't remember him saying that. In the other bonds, it was about $2 million, A and B. So here's a little more detail on the principal and interest. So here you can see these bonds will be paid off early. Here's like a four-year bond here, $129,000. So that is principal that would be paid off. Here are the interest payments here. You can see they're making bigger payments out here. And then out of that, I think we had $23 million in cabs. They're paid way back here, down here at the bottom. But this gives you a little detail on what the interest versus the premiums are payments are each year for just Series C.
Is that the same capital appreciation rate assumptions as Series B?
What does that mean? What do you mean by that?
Well, there was a 6% and 8% growth in capital appreciation assumptions.
I'd have to look into it. I couldn't answer that question.
Hey, Gary.
I do want to point this out, though. It's the ratio is a 2.25 to 1 payoff ratio.
Yeah, that's a good whole ratio. Series.
I wish they were all that way, but.
Yeah. Gary, could you go back one slide?
Yes.
So, all right, this is interesting. You know, this is something I haven't seen a lot of, actually, and I guess it's something specific to maybe municipal debt offerings, but the premium. I've often wondered this. So you can buy debt out there, commercial or municipal debt out there, for a relatively large rates. And I wonder, and I don't think that's what the agency is having to pay, so it makes sense that there's a premium. So the premium itself, is this essentially, and I understand the concept that they're paying cash for this premium to have an effective interest rate that's greater than the interest rate on the debt. But is this a pure pass-through? Is this how this works?
Most of it is a pass-through. It basically is going to be used to pay off the bonds.
Yeah.
It goes right to the treasurer.
Right. And so you issue more debt, and they essentially pay you cash that you can use to pay off that debt.
No, they pay more for that. The issuance is still $74 million, but they paid us $4 million
right, as a premium.
Extra on top of that in order to have a higher interest rate.
Right.
So if you average the $4 million out, let's say they have a coupon of 5%, but it really nets out to about 3 or 3.5, something like that. And that's not an accurate measurement, but it gives you an idea.
No, I think I understand. So let me ask the question a little differently. So, you know, ultimately, while the amount of debt was $79 million,
uh-huh.
You know, ultimately, the cash proceeds or the premium is provided back to the agency, for you to be able to pay a debt service.
Yes, and the debt is $74.7 million. The first sign, that is the real debt.
Another way to look at this is that premium is cash that the district gets up front that is available to use up front to pay costs of issuance and I suppose some of the capitalized interest payment. If they didn't generate that premium, the funds available for the construction projects would be that much lower.
Yeah. All right, well, I guess my ultimate question is, there is, it's neutral to the property owner, to the ultimate payer of the debt, the
yes.
property owner.
Yes, okay. The only difference is, see the 4.4 versus this, about 400,000 is used to pay issuance costs.
All right, but ultimately...
It's ultimately an even thing. There could be arguments. I could sit there and say, but you're paying, using it to pay the first bonds off.
Yeah.
You know, that kind of thing, instead of just saving it to pay at the end,
yeah.
which I guess the treasurer won't do, but that's what I would do if I had the money. I'd just save it and let it earn interest and then use it at the back end to pay, make payments.
But ultimately it's neutral.
Yes.
No real advantage to it, but no disadvantage either.
Yes.
But a lot of the premiums in A and B were at 12% interest rates.
But the net we got, when you net it out, it still worked out to what we
right.
have
that
2%.
Right, under the old rules before we changed the law. Now you've got premiums that goes right into the reserves. So if you mm-hmm. sold a 12% bond, you uh-huh. got a big premium, that just went into the treasurer for his bond payment. Mm-hmm. It's an awful expensive insurance policy.
One thing to realize is that 12% coupon on the premium bonds, yeah, that's the interest that the person's going to get back. They gave the district a lot of money up front. So what's more important to look at is not the interest, but the yield on that bond.
Yeah, but we didn't see any of that premium.
Yeah, we did. Sure.
Yeah, we did.
The district did. Of course they did.
The district did. Proceeds.
No, it goes right into the bond payment.
Yeah, he said it's correct. It goes into the other fund deposit. It's not touched. $4 million was shifted over there.
Yeah.
The district didn't get it.
Well, so you got 400,000 of the
four. Yeah, 400,000, but that's
the
previous bond.
It's there to use for the projects that Prop K was sold for.
No, it doesn't go to the treasurer.
No,
yeah,
it doesn't go to the treasurer.
This one it does.
For what?
To make bond payments.
Yeah, well, yeah, so it goes back to the district. It's not like the district doesn't get it.
No,
well,
the district doesn't get it.
It's just a misunderstanding. The treasurer works on our behalf.
Right. Right.
It's still our
easier.
Yes, it goes into our pot to make bond payments,
right,
as opposed to the taxpayers paying them.
Okay. Well, Gary, let me ask this question since I started this discussion. Let me ask this question a slightly different way so I make sure I completely understand.
Okay.
So when you do your arbitrage calculation, is this part of your arbitrage calculation?
Yeah. It is. If you look here on the next page, the all-in TIC reflects all of the costs of issuance, premiums, discounts, everything, interest on the bonds. That's the purpose for the
all-in. And we would have to make some really good, I mean, the interest rates would really have to jump to have us to create a problem with arbitrage. And the treasurer is required not to, I'm just saying, interest went nuts.
Right.
And we started getting 10% of their checking out. He could only invest up to that dollar amount, that percent.
Right.
And 4.
But you have caps to it, yes.
Yes,
right.
It's capped.
Okay.
Arbitrage hasn't been in this issue for years.
Right.
Yeah. Right.
Well, you know that's the ultimate calculation, though, to ensure that you're not essentially using your preferential ability to borrow at a lower rate to earn income.
That's correct. IRS doesn't like that.
Yeah, they don't like that. So, ultimately, and so in light of CABs being an issue in the last few years, it's just sort of it's just good, I guess, to have the discussion.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so these are the issuance costs and who the money goes to. Bond counsel, disclosure counsel, a lot of the lawyers involved. And so that is the $366,000. The underwriter gets $418,000. It was about, it was 0.56% of the bond, so that's the lowest I've seen in a long time. Yes, Tom?
The Linda Group got over half of the issuance?
Say that again.
The Delinta Group?
Yes.
Received over half of
yes.
the issuance cost?
Mm-hmm.
How many hours of work does that represent?
Months and months. We don't do it on a hourly basis like an attorney. Even the attorneys don't. They just say, here's a flat rate for our work.
So how do we know that we spent the money wisely or that the school district spent the money wisely?
How do you know if that's an equitable rate?
Yes.
We've had comparisons with other districts and sales, and that's been in the range in their percentage of what other
financial FAs charge?
Yeah, so in the industry, it's based on usually the percent of par amount. It's that last column. So what's important is that the district is comfortable that that percent of par amount for the financial advisor is reasonable given the market for financial advisory services.
Can we look at some comparables just as an oversight to see how it compares?
If I can get a hold of them, yeah. I'd have to call other districts, and that it's not something I've normally done. It's not like at a central bank where I can get that bank of information, but I can call around and see what other districts are getting. Another thing has to do with the size of the bond. You know, like I have some districts that have a flat rate, but they're selling smaller bonds. The smaller the bond, the higher percentage ratio.
Well, I was just going to say that. You know, one size doesn't fit all. Every deal is a lot different.
Yeah.
Was it competitively bid?
No.
So it was a preferred vendor from a previous offering?
Vendor's been working with us since about 2006.
Yeah.
On various things, so the board was comfortable with them. Another thing with this type of individual or company, it's like an attorney. You don't want to take the lowest bid for an attorney. You don't want to take the lowest bid for this type of service because they may not have the equal capabilities. Timing is everything, and this particular person's been very good at picking timing for us to get the lowest interest rates, which you don't see on paper. That I've seen others where the interest rates were a little higher. That's a big deal. It's when to go out on the market and sell your bond.
So they did a good job?
I think they did. So far, I think they did. And in talking to other people, I think they have. But it's very hard to do comparison and take the lowest bid. It's not something I'd recommend.
David, on that point, though, I don't think you were there when we presented our annual report, but one of the things I suggested as an individual later in the meeting was that from time to time the district do review their financial service providers just for the staff, for the board, for the community to be comfortable that there is some periodic review, just like they would review other service contract providers. You know, from time to time, it's important to do that. So I did make that recommendation to the board.
It would be useful to see what happened in Vista and Escondido. Sort of how, because Delinka does a lot of other work just besides our bond council.
I don't know if Vista's really going out. I think they've closed down their bond program.
I'm mostly interested in the school fee issues.
Pardon me?
I'm interested in the school fee issues and how that was set.
That's a different topic. Yes.
Hey, Gary. On contingency, is that actual $24 million? Is it $24,000?
$24,000, yeah.
Get spent, or was that?
It just stays there in case something comes up. Otherwise, it comes back to I think the county treasurer. Anything left over, I think, below it goes to the county treasurer.
But again, let's clarify. It doesn't go to the treasurer for him to use for the county. It goes to the treasurer for him to use against the
state. Bonds, yes.
Okay.
Goes into our account under our name. I'm almost positive I can't touch it. It's not like, here it is, use it for construction.
It has to be used for
I'm pretty sure it goes to back to paying off bonds. Okay. This is small. This is more detail on the bond issue by series A, B, and C. It gives you up here total amount of bond, total payment, what it's going to cost over the life of the bond, and the bottom versus the top of the column, and then grand total here of 807. That's it's a more detailed information of the summary I just gave you a page or two ago. And that's it. Any other questions on the Series C?
No, I think the board did a great job reducing the debt service to par ratio learned from the Series B bond, reducing it from 6.2 down to 3.1. So that's a great job.
Yeah, and remember, our grand total, we told the public it would be about, we estimated it that way back then it might cost about $951 million over the life of the bonds. And I think we got it down about $25 million is what we're looking at. If we sell the last five, who knows what the interest rates will be when we do. Right now, they are like rock bottom. There's such a demand for tax-free munis out there. And so we're refinancing some CFD bonds, that's Community Facility District bonds right now, about $28 million at a very low percentage rate. Hope to save about $2 million on that over the next 15 years.
Okay, anything else on this receipt? Okay. Let's move on to the school bond transparency report from the San Diego Taxpayers Educational Foundation. I know it was sort of short notice, but you know, since it was we're having our quarterly meeting, I wanted to be sure that we all had a chance to take a look at this. And as it turns out, it's actually a very good report. And one way to tell that is I did send out later in the day a draft response. I think this is something that the COC should respond to the governing board and the council and staff. And what I did in this report was to extract the things that were specific to San Marcos, because in this is all San Diego school districts that had citizens oversight committees. So hopefully you've had a chance to look at both reports, but what I'd like to do is just point out, you know, one of the things we did early on in the year was to spend some time with staff redoing the website, and it certainly proved to be helpful in this report. For example, they said, compare this, talking about another school district that didn't do so well, compare this to the experience in finding information when the link to the COC homepage is prominently placed on a homepage, like in the case of San Marcos Unified School District. On SMUSD's homepage, there is immediately a link to information regarding the school facilities, this link, et cetera, et cetera, and their statement regarding the overall content of the COC website. However, two schools that passed the facilities bond since the issuance of the 2011 report have been able to perform at an exceptional level. SMUSD only missed one mark on the website section of the transparency scorecard. And that one point was that we didn't have a link to the bylaws. They call it the bylaws, but in our case, it was the resolution adopting the rules and regulations for the COC. So, you know, you see in here, I'm suggesting that we do that. So that, to me, it's a minor thing. Mm-hmm. So that was the website. The next section that they look at is annual report and audit information transparency. And again, if you recall, this year we recommended and the board adopted some changes to the procedure for the audit reports and how they're received. And what's interesting is they start the report by saying the report concluded that as a whole, school districts did not perform as well in the transparency of annual reports and audits as they did with the transparency of the websites. However, SMUSD was one of the seven districts that missed only one point. The PEF report indicated that the reports didn't itemize expenditures by their site. Almost all of the expenditures, and this is my comment now, almost all of the expenditures for the period covered in this report have been devoted to the San Marcos High School reconstruction. Now that the district is moving on to other projects, the COC has asked staff to report expenditures by site and by project, which is starting tonight. And this should also be reflected in the annual reports and audits going forward. The report also suggests that the firm providing this audit should have specific project management and construction industry best practices. While not an adverse finding for the SMUSD, the report does support more frequent COC reports than the annual required report. And I added this comment, while the COC does not provide a more frequent report per se, the website's updated each quarter after our COC meetings. So in effect, we are doing a quarterly update to the public, to the community, and to the government on the report. Overall, SDTEF, in its conclusion on annual report audit information transparency, stated SMUSD again excelled in its performance in the report and audit criteria. So, we had two minor findings. And so, my suggested draft report, the COC follow-up and recommendations, I say the COC welcomes the comments contained within the report and offers the following responses and recommendations.
one, a link to Resolution 28-10/11. Adopting the policies and regulations relative to the COC will be included on the COC website. Number two, the COC recommends that